You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by K Jewelers. Every kiss begins with K.
Welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by our friends at K Jewelers. It is Matt Wehmeyer alongside Jim Duquette on this, the final day of November. My, how time flies. Just about to turn the calendar to December. First and foremost, Duke, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was always good to be lying around not doing much except for eating and watching TV.
Yes.
I know you did the same.
I did the same, and my day was going great till the Cowboys game began, and the less said about that, the better. So you had a good Thanksgiving.
I did.
I had a good Thanksgiving. Jordan Zimmerman had a pretty good Thanksgiving. Good Thanksgiving weekend as he signs a five-year, $110 million free agent contract with the Detroit Tigers. It's going to be his first foray into the American League, and a big splash made here by Alavila. They lose Max Scherzer last year. The Tigers finish in last place after four straight AL Central crowns, and talk about a big way to try to fortify that rotation. The Tigers certainly do.
Well, and their rotation has not been very good over at least this past year. And they've had some ups and downs. They ended up trading David Price, and so the end of the year, that impacted them. They've had health issues. Verlander wasn't very good for most of the year until the end of the year. Anibal Sanchez was injured. So they've had some inconsistencies there. So that was priority number one for Al Avila. Obviously, he was looking up for bullpen help, too. He already got K-Rod. And he went out and he got Cameron Maybin. Now he throws the big icing on the cake, so to speak, with Jordan Zimmerman. And I think they were a sleeper in this. You know, Zimmerman wanted to go to the Midwest and pitch there if possible. And I'm not so sure there were any other teams, at least in the mix right now. I think there would have been down the road. And he probably left a year on the table. He probably, in my opinion, could have gotten at least 6 years. But when you look at the AAV, 22 a year, 5 years, I mean, it's a significant deal for a 30-year-old pitcher.
Do you think that Al Avila, did he maybe perhaps at first target some of the marquee names like the Cuadros and the Greinkes and the Prices of the world? Of course, they had David Price. But do you think he kind of went that route and said, you know what, I'm going to try to go for, I don't want to say somebody of lesser stature, but somebody not quite as expensive as some of those other marquee guys?
Well, I think he made a calculated move with Zimmerman in particular and said, listen, while these other teams are shopping for Price and Greinke, you're our number one choice, Jordan. And he went to Zimmerman, he went to the agent, and that can be compelling, very compelling for a guy who's out there in the free agent market. He turned down, you know, at least reported 5 years, $105 million by the Nats last year. And so, you know, he had a down year. His strikeout rate went down. His home run rate went up. ZRA went up, you know, from 2014, which was a real good year for him. So I think all of those things, a little bit of uncertainty maybe in the back of Zimmerman's mind, number one. But more importantly, number two, pitching in the Midwest. You know, you hear a team in the Midwest close to where you grew up in Wisconsin saying, you're our number one choice. That can be very alluring and very compelling. A little unusual going from the National League to the American League. Usually you see pitchers go the other way. So it's not going to be an easy one for him, but you know, this guy has not shown any real drop in terms of the workload, maybe the velocity a little bit, about a mile and a half or so difference between 2014 and 2015. But overall, this is a really good, I'd say, number two type pitcher. And if Verlander's pitching the way he's capable, that's a good tandem to have.
And you touched on this just moments ago, but you know, anytime a guy, whether it's a pitcher or a position player, anytime they go from the NL to the AL, there's always that concern because there's the perception, and sometimes grounded, you know, in fact, that the AL is a better hitting league. So you've got a guy that pitched, let's say, a third of his games last year against the Phillies and the Marlins and the Braveses of the world. He's going to be going now to the AL Central. You got the reigning world champs. You got a White Sox team with plenty of thunder in that lineup, an Indians team that's always, you know, kind of a sleeper. Should Tigers fans be concerned that, you know what, the competition is not going to be what it was in a weak NL East last year?
Well, I do think, you know, when you look at his career ERA, you know, it's in, let's say, the low threes. At least, let's say, over the last 4 years, it's in the low threes. And you know, you might as well add about 0.3, 0.4, somewhere in that range, because that's just what the average earned run average is, the difference between the American League and the National League. So you might as well add that to your pitcher, too. Now, he may pitch better than that, especially because they haven't seen a lot of them as much there, certainly in the American League Central. But as you mentioned, the lineups are definitely deeper. You have the DH. Obviously, the pitchers aren't hitting. So, you know, it's going to be a little getting used to from Zimmerman in terms of having to navigate through that lineup that third time through the lineup, or even the fourth time through as he gets later into the game. So, yeah, I think there's some adjustment period there. But this is a solid guy. His average velocity, 93.5 miles per hour. He's got the good slider, cutter, curveball, doesn't throw the change as much, but he's got a four-pitch mix. And so I think that's the other aspect of him that's intriguing is 4 years down the road when the velocity does start to drop, he knows how to pitch, and he's certainly competitive enough, too, to compete in that division.
And we get so caught up nowadays in, who's your ace? Who's your number one? Who's your number two? How do you fill out 3, 4, 5? When you look at that Tigers rotation as currently constructed, does he slot, behind Verlander, behind Sanchez, in between? What do you think?
Well, I think it's Verlander. If he's pitching the way he did at the end of the year, then he's their ace. Then they're paying him that kind of money to be their ace. At some point, he's going to, start to age to the point where you have to worry about him. And then I think Zimmerman's going to be that guy. In the next couple of years, it's going to be Zimmerman, Verlander, Verlander, Zimmerman, 1-2. You can't go wrong either one. Sanchez, because of his health, is a great number three. That slots him in perfectly. You got Daniel Norris. I wouldn't be surprised if the Tigers go and look for another starter. That's what Al Avila has talked about doing. So this is still a real good team that's took a step back. They don't lose a draft pick. They were the ninth worst team, so they still maintain their first rounder. They'll lose their second round pick in signing Zimmerman. So a lot of good things, I think, come out of this signing for the Tigers.
Yeah, definitely promising for the Tigers, and a big splash made by Al Avila. Last week in bringing in Jordan Zimmerman, formerly of the Washington Nationals, another guy that's making a move from the NL to the AL, Jay Happ, a 3-year, $36 million deal. He rejoins the Toronto Blue Jays. And Duke, this is a guy that at the trade deadline last year, it barely registered a blip on the radar when the Pirates signed Jay Happ. And lo and behold, behind Gerrit Cole, I would argue he was their second best pitcher. The second half of the season put up tremendous numbers. Now rejoining the Blue Jays on a 3-year, $36 million deal. What do you think of this move for the Jays?
Well, there's a little bit of risk with him. They had him before, and going to the American League wasn't very good. If you look at his numbers in Seattle just last year, it was not good, American League. But as you mentioned, when he went to Pittsburgh didn't even – they weren't even looking for a starting pitcher until A.J. Burnett injured himself right before the deadline. So the timing was good where they could go out and find someone. They liked Happ. They have always liked Happ. They made a little adjustment in his delivery, made him more consistent in throwing strikes. He made an adjustment by throwing his fastball more. He threw his fastball over 70% more, and because of that, he's got a cutter and a slider. That was really the main difference for him. It wasn't a whole lot of difference, but it was a main difference. And so all of a sudden you saw his last 60 innings, a remarkable change, pitched like their best or second best pitcher. So how is that going to translate back to the American League? If he can stay in that mix of pitches, that aggressiveness with his fastball and throwing strikes and stay on the target with his delivery like he did in Pittsburgh, then I think it's going to be a good deal. They're trying to mitigate the risk, so to speak, Toronto is, and diversify. You don't hear that very often in baseball, but that's what they're trying to do. Try to diversify and get, between Estrada and Happ, you can get 55 to 60 starts easily and get quality and hope that, they keep you in the game, allow four runs a game where that offense can, really end up scoring you 5 or 6 runs a night.
Yeah, that seems to be their strategy. They bring back Marco Estrada. They're going to have Marcus Stroman back and healthy, presumably, for a full year. And now Jay Happ is back in the fold. I want to get your opinion based on your front office days. It seems like sometimes coaches don't get enough credit. Jay Happ goes to Pittsburgh, becomes a completely different pitcher. He's now away from that pitching coach, from that pitching environment. How much could that potentially adversely affect him?
It can. Listen, Ray Searidge is one of the best pitching coaches in the game, and Pittsburgh has had the benefit. He's turned around Liriano. He's turned around Volquez. This is another one, Happ. He's helped A.J. Burnett. So he's had a track record of doing that. The pitching coach in Toronto, a little less experienced in Pete Walker, but I think what ends up happening with these type of guys, Happ's a smart guy, he's a Northwestern kid. He understands his mechanics. He understands pitching. And once he goes through the success, now he's going to be on his own. Now I think there's some checkpoints for the Blue Jays to keep an eye on. I don't expect that to be as big of an issue. I don't expect it to be as big of an issue with him throwing his fastball. Russell Martin's one of the best catchers in the game. I think it's more about him staying mechanically in sync, in rhythm. And if he can do that, then I think he'll be fine up there.
So Jay Happ has found a new home, which was at one point an old home in Toronto, his second stint with the Jays. We've talked about Jordan Zimmerman finding a new home. Johnny Cueto almost found a new home. Reports out there in the last day and a half that he was offered a 6-year, $120 million contract by the Arizona Diamondbacks. And Johnny Cueto said, Thanks, but no thanks. So, Duke, let's try to get inside that dreadlocked head. To turn down that kind of money, even as a marquee, highly coveted free agent, what is going through Johnny Cueto's head right now?
Well, first off, usually these type of discussions don't get out into the public, you know, and I think that's the one thing that stands out is this is a normal kind of back and forth conversation. Teams express interest. They throw out offers. Players turn them down all the time. It happens quite a bit, especially with the elite stars. I mean, you look at what Cueto's done over the past 4 or 5 years. It's been better than almost everybody but maybe Greinke, even better than David Price. And so his asking price is pretty steep. It's up there at 150s or somewhere in that, $160 million. I talked to his agent, Bryce Dixon, recently, and he expects him to be paid in that number one, number two type starter. In fact, going into this year, you could put Cueto on a small list of about 8 starters in the game that you'd say were one of the best. So he's looking to get paid, you know, more, what he feels is fairly compensated. I don't know how he's going to get to that number of 150, 160. That's a big number to go to. People remember what happened in September in Kansas City. And so that's the thing to me. I'm fascinated to see where this goes because if Arizona was aggressive, they went after him. They found a guy that they thought was a good fit. They paid what they thought was above market or at least certainly fair market. They didn't get their player. Now, do they pull their offer and go somewhere else? Do they let it sit there? You know, Cueto could be what happened to James Shields last year. There was a lot of high asking prices last year, and it fell back to the $75 million range. Hopefully that doesn't happen with him. But it is some risk there. There's no question about it. And I think that's the interesting thing, Cueto's agent kind of rolling the dice.
Do you think that, let's say that it was an American League team that offered him 6 years and 120 with the caveat of, okay, we know your track record, but you did struggle for quite a stretch after coming over from the Reds to the Royals late in the 2015 season. Again, if it was an AL team that offered him that kind of money, would Cueto be more apt to say, you know what, based on my performance or lack thereof, joining the Royals, 120 in that case would have been more acceptable?
I think that he still values, and the agent still values him himself. It's about value, and it's about sometimes it's about ego with these high-end pitchers or position players too. You know, they stack themselves up in a ranking. Where are they? Where do they fit with this free agent class? And their expectation is, all right, if David Price is going to, like everybody thinks, get close to $200 million, and Zach Greinke is going to get 5 times 30, let's say, at 150, well, why am I accepting $20 million? That's $10 million less per year. I need to be a little closer to that. And so that's how you see some of these numbers creep up. And I think that's going to be the fascinating part is somebody going to be willing to do that, you know, in the American League or National League? I think what it does do is validates Cueto. There's some question about his health because he didn't pitch well. Because a team like Arizona was willing to commit to that, and I know it's pending a physical, but because they were willing to go to that level, I think it does validate his argument that he is healthy and that there shouldn't be a lot of concern. I do think that in a kind of an odd way, it helped him in his value in the marketplace so that it doesn't drop down into the $60 or $70 million range.
Yeah, very interesting discussion there between the two sides, and interesting to see the Diamondbacks, as you said, really go for it. They could be a sleeping giant in that NL West behind the Dodgers and Giants who have reigned supreme the past couple of years, and we'll see what the Diamondbacks do. We'll see if they take the offer off the table or if a couple other offers roll in and they revisit negotiations somewhere down the road. Interesting to see how that develops in the coming weeks. Duke, shifting now from starters to closers, Johnny Cueto's former teammate in Cincinnati, Aroldis Chapman, one of two marquee closers involved in trade talks. We've seen one marquee closer already been dealt, Craig Kimbrel from the Padres to the Red Sox. So the Red Sox have found their ninth inning guy. But when you look at Chapman and Melanson, you take into consideration their track records, their ages, what they might bring back in return. Of the two, who's a little more appealing right now?
You know, it's hard for me to know if there's one that's better than the other. I think they're both really good. I would still take Chapman because he's left-handed and he throws 99 to 100 miles an hour. But Melanson's been very good, very consistent and pitched at a high level too. So I think if you're looking at trying to find value out there, they're both going to be expensive. I don't know if they get traded or not. You know, the price tag for Craig Kimbrel was 4 prospects, 2 fairly premium ones, 2 lesser ones. But that, you know, considered him, you know, it was 2 plus an option. So it's 3 years under control. To me, it's got to be at least half of that. Maybe 1 premium guy, 1 kind of secondary guy, if you want either Chapman or Melanson. And then the team, Cincinnati or Pittsburgh, they have to decide if it's worth it for them to move him. So there's still some things that have to happen here. I do think that one of them will get moved. I'm not sure exactly which one. Probably Chapman. I know that Houston's really been on top of that and trying to get Chapman to close out games for them. They tried at the deadline. It fell through. So to me, that's interesting. I also think it's interesting. You mentioned Kimbrel. You know, even Joaquin Benoit was already traded. He can be closing up in Seattle. K-Rod got moved from Milwaukee, obviously, over to Detroit. He's going to close. So there's been that market that's all kind of because there aren't a lot of closers on the free agent market, teams are at least dangling their closers out there trying to see what they can get in return.
Yeah, and like we said, Chapman with the 1 year left, but it might take a lot to bring him in, but he's so good. He could be that missing piece of the puzzle. Again, we've seen what the Royals have done the past 2 years with the dominant bullpen. The Yankees, you know, didn't win the division, but they reached the playoffs. They had a lights out back of the bullpen too. This could kind of become the new trend. So even though a team would only have him presumably for 1 year, it could be very appealing if a team feels that a guy like Chapman or like Melanson is kind of the missing piece of that puzzle towards getting from a good bullpen to a potentially dominant bullpen. Interesting story too with Aroldis Chapman. He has signed on with singer slash actor Mark Anthony, the former the ex-husband of J-Lo. Is this correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Two kids. Well done, Mark Anthony. And he's now signed to his media company, Magnus Media,
right.
Aroldis Chapman. Does this have any impact on negotiations, or is this kind of a just, it's out there and it is what it is?
It usually doesn't. I think where it does impact him is on the marketing side. You know, Rock Nation is the only other one with Jay-Z, and you look at, they were connected with the CAA, which was one of the top baseball groups. This Mark Anthony is connected with Barry Praver, so Praver and Shapiro Group. And they've been have had a lot of experience out there in the agent world negotiating contracts too. So there's that agent, you know, kind of relationship that you have with the teams, and then there's the marketing side of it that you're still waiting for on Cano and still waiting on with Cespedes. We haven't really seen that yet, but I think that's where they have their impact. A guy like, you know, Mark Anthony certainly having an impact on that front when they decide to do it with Chapman. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe we'll see him in some national commercials.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Would you?
No,
why not? But, yeah, it seems like these guys, you know, Jay-Z, Mark Anthony, they see what Scott Boras is doing these days. And, hey, it's, you know, not a bad side gig when we're not making records or acting in films or whatever. So, again, Aroldis Chapman, now a client of Mark Anthony's media group, Magnus Media. Another transaction that went down on Monday, veteran outfielder Chris Young has crossed the Mason-Dixon line of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. He joins the Red Sox coming over from the Yankees where he spent 2015 and part of 2014. Is this kind of a fourth outfielder move for the Sox here?
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be some people that will wonder, are they going to move an outfielder? They're not. I mean, Young is a backup outfielder, but he really hits lefties well. His average over 300 this past year, 2015. He's got some power still. He's a great athlete. He can play all three outfield positions. It's really what you're looking for at Fenway Park, a former center fielder that can play right field as well. It's expansive out in right field. That's been kind of their mantra here over the past couple of years, is try to find a real good defender to play right field too. And so Young could bounce back and forth. They got a real young outfield, obviously, with Castillo and Betts and Jackie Bradley. So Young will find himself playing time. It's not going to be a lot, but it will be, I think, against certain lefties for sure. Maybe you'll see him get some time with righties too. But his versatility, I think, is what helps, you know, with John Farrell added to that bench.
Now, what I find interesting is that the Red Sox fourth outfielder last year was, by all intents and purposes, Brock Holt. Could this move kind of precipitate a move permanently to the infield for Holt? If that's the case, what does that do to the rest of that infield?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could. Look, with Holt, he's a valuable piece, as you know. I mean, he can play all the outfield positions. He can play most of the infield positions as well. You know, he's the less expensive version of Ben Zobrist. Zobrist, we see how much teams are willing to pay for. Well, Brock Holt gives you a similar type of productivity for a lot less money. So, you know, I think he's still going to be that guy that bounces around and moves around to different positions based off of productivity, based off of kind of injuries to other positions. Listen, Pablo Sandoval, if I'm in his shoes, I make sure I come in better shape. Holt might just take his job on a more permanent basis. They're not going to give out jobs next year. You know, Hanley Ramirez is going to have to come in better shape. So is Pablo. And a guy like Holt kind of keeps them all honest.
As we come down the home stretch here, Marcelo Zuna of the Marlins, how much longer will he be with the Marlins? Duke, what do you think?
Well, you know, they haven't received value yet. This guy's a good player. I'm surprised that he's being made available. I know he had a down year, had some falling out, some disagreements between Dan Jennings when he was managing and the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, about playing time, and they sent him to the minors. He wasn't happy. I mean, I think it's probably better in a change of scenery type of guy. But it's a talented player. He's got all the tools to play either center field or corner spot. He's got power. He's a 20-plus home run guy. He could drive in 80 to 90 runs. I think he could get back to where he was in 2014, which is a pretty significant season. So, you know, it's going to cost – you know, I think the problem that you have is if you're an acquiring team, Seattle was rumored, others, but mostly Seattle. I think he really fits in Cleveland, too. You're not paying full freight for him. He had a down year, and you know he's fallen out of favor. But if you're the Marlins, you're looking for full freight in return. Those are deals that are hard to make. You know, you're going to hear his name out there. Maybe there'll be some kind of middle ground or compromise you can make. But I think this is going to be a difficult one because the asking price is high, and it should be for Ozuna.
Marcelo Ozuna has played the entirety of his rather brief career in the state of Florida. Ben Zobrist did for many years as well as a member of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's now a world champion after coming over midseason in a trade from the A's to join the Kansas City Royals. He is a highly coveted free agent. It would seem you keep hearing he would be a perfect fit with the Mets, who are probably going to lose Daniel Murphy at second base. Do you see that being the ideal fit for both sides?
Well, there are a couple teams. I mean, there's one really good fit in the with the Mets. The Nationals are a really good fit. I mean, there's a few, you know, obviously going back to Kansas City would be a real good fit. He fits in so many different places. He could fit with the Dodgers. He could fit with the Yankees. I mean, some high profile and high revenue teams. I do think that the Mets, you know, they've made him as their number one priority. He's older. He's 35, but he doesn't have a draft pick. So that's enticing to a lot of teams. I think this is actually going to come down to the Mets and the Nationals in a little bit of a bidding war for his services, which is if you're the agent, the player is exactly what you want. I mean, he's looking for 4 years. I think a lot of teams are going to try to hold the line at three. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a four-year deal between $16 and $18 million. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up a Met. It's a really good fit because he can play multiple positions and spell guys. So it's something that, you know, it's going to heat up here in the next week to 2 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a decision within the next 2 weeks.
To wrap up here, I guess, gaze into your crystal ball. Do you see a big deal going down before the winter meetings, or is that all going to be held off until we all get to Nashville?
You know, it's hard to know for sure. I think there's a couple guys out there, in particular a guy like Darren O'Day, who's a little bit lesser free agent. There's been a lot of interest in him. He's been pushing for a fourth year. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in. You know, the impact that a guy like Zimmerman has potentially on Mike Leake, Jeff Samardzija, that whole group, you know, now you can attach yourself because he's at the above of that, at the top of that class, not really to the Greinke level or the Price level. So he brings them up. So that kind of defines their market a little bit, too. I wouldn't be surprised if we get one of those type of guys that, you know, Yovani Gallardo, they try to attach themselves to that number and see if there's something that can get done before we head to Nashville over the weekend.
Yes, it won't be long. The first week in December, and December is almost upon us. Like I said at the top of the show, that is hard to believe. The weather cooling down, the hot stove is heating up, and thank you for joining us once again. The MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast presented by K Jewelers. For Jim Duquette, I'm Matt Wehmeyer. Join us again next week right back here for more Hot Stove Talk.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.